standardized preparations are such drugs, tinctures, extracts, which have been brought to a certain amount of their effective contents. Originally, this had been tried, although in a rather unsatisfactory way, in the United States and in England, whereby Myers reagent was used for the determination of the alkaloids concerned. In recent days, most of the pharmacopoeias have presented methods for the determination of alkaloids in tinctures and extracts, simultaneously fixing a definite amount of these alkaloids as the standard. Mm. Now, I might add here that we do not compound prescriptions as much today as we used to. In other words, you had to know whether these ingredients would go together. You had to know all about your drugs, the maximum dosage. The doctors today are dealing with different types of drugs. In the last 10 years, or I will say, put it this way, many of the drugs that we are using today and prescribing today and putting up were not known 10 and 15 years ago. So there is not the old compounding like we used to have. Occasionally we get some, but not too often. So more or less, it is counting the pills and the tablets and pouring, but you have to keep pace with this situation, and therefore you keep reading, you keep studying in order to keep pace with it. And you do have to know, because there are so many different strengths and combinations. Yeah. And the file that we keep is instrumental or valuable in the sense that the different families have a card, the head of the family with other members of the family name on it. And this indicates on there whether they have any allergies, whether they have any sugar, whether anything in any way that concerns the health of the individual. It is put on there so that we'll know whether they should have certain medications or not. And many times we do have to contact the physician or the patient to find out or get certain information in order to protect them. It is not always easy. Sometimes they take offense, but 95% of the people are very cooperative.
Of course, when you get to the doctor, too, sometimes the patient mightn't understand this, but when you get to the doctor, I would think he would thank you very kindly for making the observation.
Oh, yes, they realize
this, too.
They'd
be very cooperative.
And many people, of course, today will go to one doctor and another doctor, and the doctor doesn't know this, and we don't know it, and they might be taking two or three medications, types of medications, when possibly they conflict. And we try to remedy this situation by the information that we get. So it is all beneficial to the patient.
Are you allowed now, is a druggist allowed now to keep his medicines or keep his herbs or mixtures in the apothecary jars? Or does he have to have them in sealed, really sealed containers?
Well, we do not have any apothecary jars, so-called, that had, like the old crude drugs.
No more.
No more.
No.
That is out the way. In fact, I had probably 75 or 100 square glass jars with ground tops.
Mm-hmm.
But no longer do we use those. But we do have, of course, some tinctures, some extracts, some elixirs, and so forth, that are still used today. But our greatest, dispensing is the tablets and the capsules and so forth, the pills.
You, of course, some of the drugs, the new drugs too, demand refrigeration. Now, years ago, you didn't have very many like that.
No, there was no refrigeration in years ago. That was it. There was no refrigeration that I know of in my day, in the early days. But today, they're very particular about many of the modern drugs that they refrigerated.
It must have been, too, that some of the compounds that you would make up wouldn't lose their strength because of lack of refrigeration.
Oh, yes.
You wouldn't realize it.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Very true.
Yes.
I remember in making the suppositories that we used to have to make, there was two different methods or ways, perhaps more, but the one that we used to... The one we used to use was the mold type. And this was a brass mold, and you heated your cocoa butter and put your medication in that. And and get it all evenly distributed, and got your mold at a certain temperature. In other words, it had to be quite cold, so we used to put it on the ice. And there was rather a knack to it, so to speak, in getting it the right temperature, because if you didn't, when you come to take the suppositories out of the mold, they would crack and break, and you'd have to do it all over again. So I did happen to get quite proficient at that, and was quite capable of getting those out pretty clean every time, so I always got that job.
Well, and then what did you do in the summertime? How did you manage to keep them cool enough?
We had ice.
Oh, you had ice.
In those days, we had the ice man that had the old ice cakes, and he delivered every day. In fact, our soda fountain was all ice in those days.
Well, of course, you wouldn't have it for the soda fountain. I forgot you must have put the you put those things down in your
fountain. The ice. But there was no refrigeration, speaking of it in the way we mean today. There was ice, yes, but not in the sense it is today. It keeps them a certain temperature, more or less, you know.
Like, for instance, when insulin first was discovered, that, of course, always had to be refrigerated.
Yes, it still is.
It still is. Sure. Don't you think that more people now take many more pills than necessary? In the old days, you somehow managed to keep yourself well without filling yourself with pills?
Yes, you didn't call the doctor until you was in bed, mostly. And you might have used some home remedies and so forth, but you stayed in the house. But today, we were living in a different era, a different time, rather. And people cannot be bothered with ailments and sickness. Therefore, they're under pressure and tension, and we're moving fast, and the result is that they just want to be rid of this thing, so therefore they take tranquilizers and other things to make themselves comfortable. Well, that's all very well and good, as long as they're doing it to assist nature. But many of them go beyond this, and they continue to take them when they shouldn't, and over periods of time. And this is one of the problems that exists.
They're trying to replace nature instead of assist it, huh?
Yes, I believe so. Yes. So there are some things like that that I often wonder about it myself. When you see people that are rugged and healthy, and yet they are taking these things day by day over periods of time. But it's not for me to judge.
Well,
I'm not the physician.
No, but I think people used to expect to be uncomfortable off and on, but now someone with the case of the sniffles runs to get a medication so quickly.
I might mention something about years ago. You know, the different drug companies put out samples from time to time, and we had one old gentleman in Houghton by the name of Thomas Somerville. Some of his relatives live here now. And he was selected, or at least he had the job, that when any of these things come out in an advertising way, he would take these samples and deliver them to the doors around town. I remember one was swamp root. And swamp root was a kidney preparation for flushing the kidneys and a certain ailment of the kidneys and so forth. He'd leave them at the door, and the kids would go find them at the door and try a little of it. And if it tasted pretty good, they'd drink some of it. Well, a little later, laws were passed relative to this, and no longer is that possible to deliver samples at the door. Very dangerous, especially for children. So that is all done away with. But I do remember that era and that time when that took place.
Do you remember when, I don't know how long aspirin has been on the market. Has that been since in your 62 years?
I can't give you the date that aspirin came on the market. I'm not qualified, or I don't know it. But in 1910, when I first went in the drugstore, they were writing for aspirin on prescription.
Oh.
And the public didn't know anything about aspirin to speak of at all over the counter. That was a prescription item, not by law. You could have got it over the counter, perhaps, but at that time, that's the way it was being used over the by prescription for rheumatism and arthritis and so forth. And this was put out by the Bayer people at that time, and they had the patent on it for 20 years. After the patent expired, as I understand it, anybody could call it aspirin, but it was acetyl salicylic acid. And acetyl salicylic acid is aspirin wherever you find it. I will say that possibly some of the tablets, and we'll name Bayer's, might have been constructed in such a way that it breaks down near disintegrates in the stomach a little more rapidly and perhaps is buffered. Mm. Might not cause so much irritation. But other than that, the effects of aspirin, as you can get that from aspirin.
any aspirin.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the same compound, basically,
yes.
No matter whose aspirin
yes,
it is.
That's right.
Yes.
I might mention the fact that some people feel that the drugs are very expensive today. Yes, they're expensive in some ways, but not expensive in another way at all. There's been a great change in that. When some of the drugs first came out, they were very, very expensive, but people clamored for them if they had these serious sicknesses or ailments. They didn't think of the price at all. They would pay for it. But these have been reduced until today. They're quite low in price, so to speak, and they have accomplished and extended the lifespan up to 70 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think it's around 70 years now. Well, that's quite a span.
Yes.
And people are health conscious today due to the different organizations, the insurance companies, and others prevailing upon them to be checked year by year. So people are aware of their health, and therefore perhaps that's one reason they go to the doctor more.
Well, I suppose so, but I don't... when you look back at early records, people seem to live pretty long in Holton, Maine years ago. You find them living up into their 80s,
yeah, that's true.
60, 70 years ago.
I might mention, I remember previous to the time I went in the drugstore, perhaps 5 years previous to that time, there would be individuals blow into town on an afternoon with an old buckboard and a couple of great big pans on the extended up from the buckboard with two old gas kerosene lamps there, for the pans were acting as reflectors. I remember one individual in particular whose name was Montana Harry, and he came to sell the potent drugs and preparations that would cure all ailments under the sun. He would start in about 7 o'clock in the main square down here, and he'd give a brief lecture and tell where he's from and his capabilities and how he was qualified to treat all these ailments and so forth. And in his particular case, he was captured by the Indians out in Montana. And he had scars on his head where the tomahawks had scarred his head and so forth. He could throw up marbles in the air and shoot them. And he would hit some of them too. But to us youngsters, he was a marvel and a hero, so to speak. But I often think of the kind of preparations and soup that he dished out to the people, and they clamored for it around that old wagon.
How much did he charge per bottle? Do you remember?
I don't know that. No. I can't remember that.
Probably 25 cents.
That's
which
right.
Would be a lot.
That's right. Yes, 25 or probably 50 cents would
now,
be about it.
Now that his medicine, would that probably have a little alcoholic content in it?
Well, you can rest assured there wouldn't be too much medication
yes.
in there that would be of any value.
Yeah.
I doubt very much if it was. His main idea was to make a buck, and that was done. And they came from time to time like that from outside. And, of course, you realize there were no cars in those days. They came by wagon.
No.
True.
Of course, he was the medicine man, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yes. That is interesting.
I don't know whether... Oh, yes. There's another subject. You know, the farmers... In those days, there were all teams, horses in the farm work. No machinery to speak of, because the cars hadn't really come, and farm machinery at that time. But they liked to keep their horses looking well, slick. Therefore, they all had their own private formula of horse powders. So they would come in with a slip of paper with fenugreek, anise, bloodroot, black antimony, and all of these different drugs which they... wanted compounded into their horse powders. Well, they would warn you, of course, that you wasn't to give that formula away to any other individual. That was his. Well, I knew that they would certainly lose the formula. That slip of paper would vanish. They no longer would have it, nor could they find it. So I used to copy the formulas in a book, knowing that they had to come back to our store to get them. And on Saturday, we would have, or ahead of Saturday, perhaps Wednesday or Thursday, we would put up 2-pound and 5-pound horse powders in bags. And we'd have them ready for the Saturday business because we couldn't stop and do it on Saturday. It required quite a bit of time to compound and put these things together. We had to put the drugs in and sift them through a sieve and get them thoroughly mixed. So on Saturday they would call for the horse powders, and one old gentleman had a formula. His I can't think of his name right off quick. His name was Alexander, George Alexander, and his horses were the very finest and looked the best. And he warned me never to give the formula to anybody. I said, no, that's yours. I won't give it to anybody. But every once in a while, I'd get a note, a letter. Let Mr. So-and-so have this formula, or have this powder. Not the formula, but the powder. So I would do so. But I will say that he always had this slick team of horses. The coat just shined to beat the band and looked good.
He really had hit the formula.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. He had something to do with it in a way, because he always had a fine team. Well, this existed, and it was one of the things that you did there in those days. And then we had Mr. George Small here in town, who was, he wasn't a veterinarian, but through experience, practical experience, and dealing with horses, he was called upon from time to time to remedy the conditions in the way with cuts and ointments and different ailments of the horse's feet and so forth. And he would call me up or come in and say, get me a pound or two of lard and a bottle of Kraalin, and he'd name off the different things he wanted in there. So some of the concoctions I put up, pretty wild, but they seemed to do the work for him.
You carried all the horse liniments and everything.
Oh, yes. In fact, our store in the lower end of the town was more or less noted for that. We went in that direction quite a bit, and we took care of the farm calls, so to speak, for the animals.
Well, and at one time, weren't there some stables just up the street from you?
Oh, yes. We had plenty of stables
there. I mean, Mr. Putnam mentioned keeping a horse one winter. And
we had several stables, and one way we'd know whether we were going to be busy or not, I'd go to the store door and look over into the APM Tabor's stable and see how many puns there was, or how many wagons there was. And in that way, we knew whether we was going to be busy or not.
Oh, sure.
And the Western horses were imported here by Archie MacLeod, and Archie MacLeod and Ira Carpenter imported the Western horses. They came in here with a carload, and they developed Western horse ale. And I do remember that we used up all the Johnson liniment in town, all the Grange had, all that the White Drugstore, French's, and Cochran's had, and we mixed up gallons and gallons of this preparation to cope with this situation on the horses.
This was a particular disease,
called Western horse ale. But that's what they called it.
Now,
I don't know whether that was such a name or not, but that's what they called it.
Was it an infection?
Yes, and it developed in the way of a cold and discharges from the nostrils and so forth. Well, they saved many, many of these Western horses, but they lost some also. But this was done.
Now, did you have to concoct the medicine?
Had
to put it together out of your own formula.
Cinchona, let me see. Cinchona, Johnson's liniment, sweet spirits of nitre. I can't remember all the ingredients, but it was quite a concoction to deal with the cold, with the trouble at that time. I do remember it because I had to do the running around to get all the stuff gathered together.
Material,
I don't know if I have any other items here that would be of interest or not, but I might say that many of the doctors that were in practice at that time have gone, stepped out of the picture, but they rendered a service to the community. They were devoted men. They gave of their time and their energy and their talents, and we've always been blessed with pretty good physicians in the town of Holton. I might name some of them that were active in my day, and I put up prescriptions for all of these men that I mentioned over the years. And when I look back at it, and I do have some of the old prescription books, and when I look back at some of those prescriptions, they're quite different than what they are today. We had F.W. Mann, J.G. Potter, T.S. Dickerson, W.B. Gibson, C.E. Williams, Harry Putnam, Dr. Fitzmaurice, Dr. Nevers, Dr. Bates, Dr. A.G. Walker, Dr. P.L.V. Abbott, Dr. Parker Ward, Dr. William Manuel, Dr. Raymond, who was out to Linnaeus, Dr. Kincaid, Dr. John Johnson, Dr. Gilbert, who was also out to Linnaeus, Dr. Frank Jackson. Then we had the dentist, Dr. Chauncey Benn, Dr. George Q. Nickerson, Dr. Barton, Dr. Lovejoy, Dr. Clifford, Dr. Clayton, Dr. Palmer, Dr. Orchid, Dr. Cassidy, and there may have been others, but these I just mentioned that have all gone on.
You mentioned the two doctors from Linnaeus. Now, Linnaeus hasn't had a doctor for a long time.
No, but they did in those days, yes. And Dr. Ebbett was out to Hodgson.
There never was any time that Holton really was without a doctor,
no,
that you know.
No, we always had physicians here. Yeah. And I could name some of the older physicians beyond that, but these are the ones that I put prescriptions
during
up for.
During your time.
But there were older doctors that I know about at, previous to that.
And most of those men, too, were not natives of Holton, were they? They came from...
No,
they're not native names, really.
That's right.
Putnam would be, I suppose.
Well, Putnam was local, yes. And T.C.S. Dickerson came from Canada, and so did Gibson. Putnam was local. Fitzmaurice came from, I don't know whether it's downstate, just where. And A.G. Walker was local out to Hodgson. He was brought up out there. And let's see, Raymond, I don't know if I can say where Raymond came from. Dr. Ben was local. Dr. Nickerson. Dr. Barton was from Canada.
Would Nickerson be the Nickerson family for whom Nickerson Lake is named for?
Yes, it connected with
that.
Yes, that's right. He was a good dentist. He used to have an old gentleman by the name of Putt Bennett, who lived out to Linnaeus, and he got to the point where he thought he was quite a physician. He had a kitchen table there. I was out one time, and that table was loaded with bottles of all kind and descriptions and all kinds of medication. He was an old soldier, veteran of the Civil War, and he got a pension. And he spent a portion of that pension every week for medication for the people who could not afford it out around Linnaeus, and he gave it to them. And many times he'd get us to put up various concoctions which were not according to Hoyle, but he used them out there. Now you can imagine the difference between that day and now.
Did he lose many friends that
well,
way?
I don't know about that, I'm sure, but I do remember one time that he came in and got a solution of, solution of atropine to drop in the eyes, and I don't know what, I think it was for one of the boys that later lived here in town, and it caused a great deal of trouble. And Dr. Mitchell called me up and asked me if I would make up a solution of pilocarpine to counteract the condition, which I did, and it came out all right. But you can see where you could get into difficulty of that, as he could, in using this, and people permitting him to do so.
Well, I don't think now anyone would dare.
No, nobody.
Would he?
Neither would we put it up for him.
No, that's true.
No, we wouldn't put it up for him.
If someone came in and asked you, though, if someone, you had the herbs or you had the box and so forth, and someone came in and asked for an outlandish concoction, personally, of things that you were allowed to sell, would you put it up without any question?
Well, I put it this way. I doubt if we could, because we wouldn't be able to obtain the drugs.
We wouldn't
today.
Have them.
We wouldn't have them, and neither could we get them,
no.
Because there isn't a call enough in the wholesale drug houses for them to stock it. So the thing is, we wouldn't be able to do it anyway,
no.
I don't think. And then the laws are that they prevent us from doing a lot of those things.
I've heard of people who could get little formulas, say, for rat killer, for rat poison, and have tried to have them made up. Someone has passed this recipe along to them, and I don't imagine that the drugstores anymore would have the ingredients.
Probably not.
That they need.
Probably not. I do remember at one time we had quite a number of rats in the lower section of the town, and they've tried everything to get rid of them. And Bill Riley came over to my place one day, and he says, "Can I use your telephone?" I said, "Sure." He went to the telephone, called the town office. And he says, "Listen," he says, "I got a shotgun, and I'm about to shoot some rats. They're running up over Smith's steps. He says, I've used all the poison Bill Cummins has got, and now I'm going to start shooting. He says, haven't you got anything up there to take care of these? And I'm putting in a complaint right now. Well, they called me up and wanted me to come up to the town office, and I went up, and they said, would it be possible for you to obtain some these ingredients to kill a large number of rats, as these are coming from the dump, the town dump? And I said, well, I don't know, but I'll try. So I wrote to the DuPont people to obtain a quantity of this stuff, and they wouldn't sell it to the town of Halton. It was sold only to the manufacturing companies who made rat poisons. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't sell it to a town. So I couldn't obtain it, but they did get in touch with the health department in Augusta, and they sent a man up here, and he put out 800 pounds of bait with whatever medication he had, and they got rid of them.
Almost anything like that, if it was so terribly powerful, you couldn't strew it around indiscriminately.
No.
You'd kill every cat and dog. And
Well, they took care of it in that way.
Yes. Did you ever, in the early days or any time in the drugstore, did you ever have people come in and handle you roughly or hold you up for medication off a drug?
No, I never have had that experience. I've had them come in for something to drink.
Mm.
And I refuse them and wouldn't sell it to them, and they get real nasty. And one individual, I undertook to throw him out, and we had a screen door, and it was paneled halfway down with four sections on the lower section with two on the above section. As we got to the door, we both slipped, but I happened to be young in those days, and I belonged to Company L, 2nd Maine Infantry, and we had an athletic association, and we had boxing gloves. And we were all pretty good with the gloves at that time. And I suppose, being young, I thought that I was in fairly good shape, so I undertook to throw him out. And I got to the door, and we both slipped. And when we went down on the floor, I jumped and kicked him and drove his head through the screen. And
that's our friendly druggist right there.
His friend on the outside called him and said, I'm afraid you can't do anything in there. And that was the only time that I ever had any fracas of any kind or physical contact with any individual. But
I think that's quite remarkable,
but
really.
But I did try it once.
Yes, but when you're dealing with the type of... Of medication and the provisions that you had in general, you would think that maybe somebody would have held you up anyway. And you were, as you said yourself, in tough end, what was called tough end.
In those days, it certainly was called that, and I guess very likely it was. I don't know whether they have any more material here that I would like to just mention or not, but...
Well, of course, your personal reminiscences are so interesting. You know, Mr. Cumming, that really, I've seen an old picture of your part of town, and I know there were potato wagons loaded down in that area. There must have been storage, or was it the...
Yes, they had starch factories, where the water company is, and they had starch factories on North Street, and... there was plenty of them around at that time, and of course when we were younger we went to the starch factory and packed starch in the barrels,
mm-hmm.
tramped it with our feet in the barrels. Yes, there was a good deal went on that in that respect, and we also had barrel factories or places where they made the barrels, down on the flat, so to speak, and over where the grange used to be. There was some over there and some over by the Buffalo Fertilizer Works, where they made barrels. And I know as youngsters we always liked to get in there on the winter day where it was warm. So we used to visit those places once in a while. Yes, those things took place. There was some other subject that I was going to mention. Oh yes, I was going to mention about the contagious diseases, scarlet fever, diphtheria, and so forth, which took place many times in those years. And they quarantined the individuals for 2 and 3 weeks at a time, and they were unable to come out of the house. I remember our own home, my brother had scarlet fever, and they quarantined us, and he was placed in the front room upstairs, and the sheets were hung over the door, sprinkled with carbolic acid, and my mother went into the room with a hot fire shovel with sulfur on it every once in a while, and walked around the room with that. This shows you the difference in treatment and medication. But however, we was to have no contact with our brother, due to the peeling and so forth, we would get the disease. So, of course, he was anxious to have a lunch often, and he would hoist the front window and whistle with his fingers. And we'd come running around to the front of the house, and he'd say, "Send me up some cookies." We'd throw him a rope, and he'd pull up a pail with the cookies, and we was in perfect contact with him all the time that we were quarantined.
Well, and after he got over that, didn't they used to fumigate with sulfur?
Oh, yes, they fumigated.
Close the room up?
With sulfur, and not only that, but with potassium permanganate and formaldehyde.
Mm.
They used a certain quantity of potassium permanganate with 1 pint of formaldehyde in a certain cubic feet. The size of the room, it had went according to that.
It would seem as if the scarlet fever didn't kill you, that all that fumigation would, because that stuff smells so terrible.
It was quite a procedure at that time.
Did anyone else in your family, did any of the other children come down?
No.
With,
no,
no,
we didn't.
Did.
No.
Were there epidemics of scarlet fever?
Oh, yes. And they put a big red sign on the front door.
So nobody.
Quarantined. Nobody was to go in, and we wasn't to go out. And that stayed for 3 weeks.
Of course, that scarlet fever used to be a killer
anyway, wasn't it? Oh, yes, and diphtheria.
Yes.
You can see what has taken place over the years in the treatment of these things. They've been eliminated.
Well, the inoculation,
yes,
for the immunization.
Yes, been eliminated.
Yes.
So, there again, span of life has been extended, you
mm-hmm.
see. Yes.
Oh, it is quite remarkable.
Well, Mrs. Action, I don't know, perhaps that's about all I have to offer, but
well,
I will say this.
What?
That I think that the individual, each one of us, wherever we find ourselves, you know, I often think of the story, it's been told, I can't tell it the way it should be perhaps, but a certain individual came along and there's two men working on a building, and one was carrying, or both I guess, were carrying mortar and bricks up to the workmen up on the staging. One fellow was growling because he had the heavy weight and these mortar and bricks all day long, and he was more or less finding quite a bit of fault.